Join Sam and Will as they bring the Bible's stories to life through historical evidence and try not to feel out of place in a car garage, all while bringing you Under the Hood.
Welcome to Under the Hood. I'm your host, Will. I'm here alongside Sam. Sam, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to be talking about the trials of Jesus. So this is going to be from the time that he's arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, taken. What happens all night? How do all these trials play out? We see this in the Gospels, and when you put them all together, what you find is that through the night, Jesus is going to be a part of five different trials. And what I want to really focus in on as we walk through this is just what a miscarriage of justice this was, how they violated all of their own laws to make sure that they got a conviction before the crowds really woke up the next day and participated in festivities. But they violated, we're going to talk about 12 different ways why this was a mistrial and would have been thrown out in the ancient world. But for Jesus, they made exception after exception after exception to make sure that he was crucified.
And this is one of the more detailed accounts we have in Scripture. But like you said, we kind of got to piece it together from other parts of the gospel. So where do we start with it all?
So we start with the first trial. So the moment that he is arrested, the Romans come for him and the temple guards come. They arrest him. Judas is going to kiss him and they take him away, right? So the first place that they take him is to Annas' house. And you're like, okay, well, who in the world is Annas? Well, he is a big deal. In fact, when Jesus is going through his trials, there's technically two high priests, but one of them is known as the public figure.
The higher priest.
Yeah, the higher priest. But there's another one who's behind the scenes who's actually Caiaphas, the high priest's father-in-law.
Okay.
And how this plays out is he was appointed high priest in 6 AD by a guy named Quirinius. We know this from records. And so he is going to be the high priest, but when a guy who held Pontius Pilate's position, whose name is Valerius Gratus, didn't like him, said, you're out. And then he puts Caiaphas in.
Okay.
But in reality, like if your father-in-law was the former guy, he's over there going, we should do this. Mm-hmm. We should do this. And so he was kind of the puppet master behind Caiaphas, the current high priest. And so a lot of people, like the skeptics will be like, oh, there's two high priests. See, the Bible got it wrong. And then history comes and it's like, no, they were both around at this time. This is exactly what you should find happening. And so like Luke and the gospel and verse 3:2 says the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas. And everybody's like, there's only one high priest. How does that make sense? Well, that's what happened.
Okay.
And so this is the first time that Jesus goes. And so this will be trial number one. And Annas is questioning him about his teachings, his motives, all of this stuff. And the scriptures required that any criminal allegations that are brought must be established by the testimony of 2 to 3 witnesses. But here you have the high priest who's coming with the accusations, essentially. And so already you see this is way different than any other trial that would have come before the high priest or the Sanhedrin.
And because it's the high priest, they're going off of Jewish law for this trial.
That's
like
correct.
Rome's not involved in this moment. This is going to the Old Testament, looking at the first 5 books, saying, what does the law say about how we handle this?
That's right. And in this trial, you hear Jesus say in John 18, verse 20, he's like, I've spoken openly to the world.
Yeah.
I've always taught in the synagogues or at temple. Where all the Jews come together? I've said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I have said. So what Jesus is doing, he's calling them out. He's being like, hey, the law requires you to bring forth the witnesses. I've said it in front of everybody. Where are your witnesses that can bring an accusation against me that I'm guilty of blasphemy or whatever it is that you're accusing me of? And so when they hear Jesus's request for witnesses, the high priest's officials strike Jesus in the face. So again, violating law. And they say, is this the way you answer the high priest? And so Jesus isn't intimidated by this use of force. Instead, he challenges and says, I want you to bring forth eyewitness testimonies. And so after this, Annas is like, okay, we're ramping up this trial. Now we're going to send you over to the official people. And he sends them to his son-in-law, Caiaphas, who is high priest. And now is where he has his trial before Caiaphas and the leading Jewish religious leaders.
Okay, so Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. This is trial number two now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so he shows up at Caiaphas' house, the high priest. If we've been to this place, like we see the dungeons downstairs and everything else that would have been there. And so this is where it's like, okay, go out and they wake up all the Sanhedrin, because you got to remember, when is this taking place?
Dead of night.
This is happening between nightfall. Jesus will be on a cross by 9 a.m., which means all of these trials they're like rushing them along. And so Caiaphas is summoning up all the Sanhedrin and the other elders of Israel. They're getting witnesses, like, just go find people, pull them in. We need witnesses. And so they're rushing to get this done. Because remember, even when they conspired with Judas, what are they saying? We need to do this when people aren't around, so because we fear a riot otherwise. Yeah. And so it's like, we got to get this done before the people wake up, because some of them might be really upset if they know what we're up to. And so they get together all these false witnesses, but here's the problem. Mark 14, that one comes and they says this, but nobody can validate, and they can't find confirming witnesses, and there's all kinds of discrepancies. And it says the chief priests, Mark 14:55, the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any. Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. And so Caiaphas is looking at this, and he's like, hey, we got to get this done. And all the witnesses, everybody's failing to bring. And so finally, he throws like a temper tantrum, and he's speaking out. And Caiaphas shouts, are you not going to answer? Because Jesus is hearing all these accusations. And in fulfillment of Scripture, like silent. Isaiah 53:7 says what?
He's going to be silent during all this.
That's right. Like a sheep before its shearers, he did not open his mouth, right? He remains quiet. Caiaphas is furious and he yells, are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you? That's Mark 14, verse 60. And Jesus just sits there silent. And so now Caiaphas has an absolute rage fest and he yells, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? And though Jesus has every right to remain silent, which we have in our law, they had in their law, now Jesus answers and he seals his fate. And he starts by saying, I am. Mm. What do you hear there?
The name of God.
That's the name of God. He says, I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Mark 14:62. And now the high priest tears his clothes and says, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? So they haven't been able to find witnesses that can bring a credible charge against him. But now he said it himself. He just said he's going to come on the clouds of glory. He opened up his own mouth to condemn himself, essentially. He says, look, you've heard the blasphemy. What do you think? And so now all the Sanhedrin around him is saying he's worthy of death. And the men who were guarding Jesus began mocking and beating him. So he's already been slapped at Annas's house.
Now he's
getting beaten by the religious leaders of Israel. The priests, the people who are at the top, they began mocking and beating him, and they blindfolded him and demanded, prophesy, who hit you? And they said many other insulting things to him. And so this is at the stage of the trial where you see Peter, who is watching this unfold, and he denies him three times, high intensity, and they can't find evidence against him. And Jesus finally opens his mouth and essentially gives them the ammunition that they need to put him on a cross by uttering a true statement, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, they look at God and accuse God of blasphemy.
And this is one of those topics that we kind of rush past to get to the crucifixion, which is one of those things. But it's hard to understand the emotions that was at play in this moment. Like, what a charged atmosphere that Jesus walked into, that he was a part of, that this trial kind of fabricated for them to literally beat him because of how they felt.
And you got to remember, they've been wanting to put him to death for a while. Like, when you read through the Gospels, it says in places, and they began looking for a way to put him to a death. And he's always, like, you read Matthew 23, the way that he speaks to them derisively of how they use their religious power to trample on people. And he's really speaking out to everyday people about how their religious leaders are corrupt. And they're like, we got to get rid of this guy. Yeah. He's threatening the institutions. He's threatening our power. We've got to put him down. And here's something that's interesting to me is at this moment, the Sanhedrin could have been like, stone him to death. Let's get rid of him. Like, because, you know, you hear all the time, people will talk about, you know, the Jews weren't allowed to impose the death penalty unless they had Rome's approval. Well, that's not true. They stoned Stephen in Acts chapter 7 without Rome's approval. They sought to capture Jesus to stone him earlier. They weren't looking for approval. I mean, you see executions in the New Testament where they don't have Rome's approval. but they weren't allowed to crucify anyone. Yeah. And crucifixion was, you know, when you put somebody on display, you're literally hung upon a cross for everybody on the roadside to see, that everybody who walks by says, don't be like that guy, because look at him. Look how viciously he's whipped. Look how shit. If God loved him, would God allow that? Mm. Like, this guy is obviously evil. He's done something wrong. He is shamed forever. And they are like, we want, it's not good enough to stone this guy.
Yeah. We want validation publicly that this guy was not who he said he was.
That's right. And so now they've concluded their portions of the trial. We've got Annas, who's handed him off to Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin, and they're like, we need him dead.
Yeah.
But stoning's not good enough. So now we need to go where?
To Rome.
To Rome. And it just so happens that during the Feast of Passover, all of the leading officials all came to Jerusalem because it was a period of potential unrest. And so Pilate had to be there because the crowds of Jerusalem swelled to many times the normal population of Jerusalem because everybody's coming to celebrate the feast. And so Pilate's right there, like he's in the city. Herod Antipas is going to be there. All the major figures are there, but they need Pilate's approval. So trial number three, Pontius Pilate.
Who was Pontius Pilate? I know we just recently released a kind of an in-depth profile on who Pontius Pilate was, but just real quick for a summary of who he was and why he's even a part of this.
So in the Roman system, you had governors appointed for various regions, and their job was basically to keep people from revolting and to collect taxes for Caesar. And so Pilate was notoriously hated by the Jews, and he hated them. It was not a good relationship. And so Pilate, you should really go watch that episode, because the Jews had begun complaining to Rome, and Caesar was like, this guy, like, Pilate, why, what are you doing? You're inflaming these people with all your antics that get them upset. If I hear any more complaints, it might be your head that I'm calling for. And so Pilate's now scared of the Jews complaining, which then also plays into the reason why they know they have leverage to get Jesus crucified. So they go to him. And if you read John 18, starting in verse 28, they say, you know, we don't have a right to execute people, because Pilate had been like, deal with them according to your own law. You guys stone people all the time. Like, go do that. And they're like, we don't have the right to execute. And that hint, hint. And then it says in John that this was hinting at the way that Jesus was going to die, which is
crucifixion,
right? And so Pilate is like, oh man, they're trying to manipulate me. This is not good. So it says, John 18, verse 33, Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, are you king of the Jews? And Jesus responded, is that your own idea, or did others talk to you about me? And Pilate said, am I a Jew? It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it that you've done? And Jesus boldly says, my kingdom's not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews, but now my kingdom is from another place. And Pilate says, you are a king then. And Jesus answered, you're right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this reason I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is on the side of truth listens to me. And Pilate famously asked, what is truth? And with this, he went out to the Jews and said, I find no basis for a charge against this man. And so you're going to find that Pilate three different times is going to go before the people and be like, I see no reason to crucify him. Like, he's not broken any of our laws. From what I can understand, he's not violating your laws. So I'm.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
I want to declare him innocent, but they're not having it.
Yeah.
So they have this exchange. Pilate's like, you know, I don't find any fault in him. Well, this makes the crowd really mad, right?
They don't like that.
And so they insist. They're coming back at him like, how dare you? You can't declare him innocent. So they insisted. He stirs up people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and has come all the way here. Well, now all of a sudden, the moment they mention Galilee, Pilate's like, I don't want anything to do with this. And you just said Galilee, and that's not my jurisdiction. You know who controls that? Herod Antipas. So this is not my case, not my jurisdiction. You need to go check him out. And so now the Jews are like, morning's coming. The crowds are going to swell. We got to get this taken care of. So now, and you can imagine, like, huge crowds, potential riot on the way, the Sanhedrin, the most powerful body that governs the Jews internally, is now going to Herod Antipas, knocking on the door, being like, you need to rule on this guy. Well, Herod is going to be, like it says, that he was excited to meet Jesus because he had heard about his miracles and wanted him to perform tricks. So he's, you know, like, you know, waking up, coming out, and he's like, sweet, I'll take a show. And is treating this whole thing like it's a farce or a fiasco. And Jesus has a history with this guy. But this is the guy who beheaded John the Baptist.
Okay.
So what do you think? Jesus is not so fond of this guy, right? Like, John the Baptist was one of his closest ally, relative friend, yep, one of his greatest champions, beheaded for speaking truth around this guy. Jesus had referred to him as a fox. He had been told, you know, Herod wants to kill you, all of these things. And so with Jesus showing up here, he treats him. When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased because for a long time he'd been wanting to see him. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform some miracle. And so he gave all these questions, but Jesus just sat there and did not give this Herod Antipas a single answer. And so Herod's like, okay, he's crazy. Ridicule him, dress him up, you know, mock him. But ultimately, they sent him back to Pilate. So that's trial number four done. And Jesus just sat there quietly and allowed him to mock him.
So does Herod make a decision?
Herod does not make a decision. Sends him back to Pilate, as in, like, I don't have grounds. I don't see what he's done. He wouldn't talk to me. None of the witnesses came to present evidence. So, like, what am I going to do with him? So it goes back to Pilate, and now the pressure begins to mount. This is when Pilate is going to be like, I'm trying to find an escape valve. His wife is coming saying, I've suffered in a dream because of this guy. Like, please don't have anything to do with him. So Pilate is like, oh, you know, here's an option. We have a custom here that once a year we allow a prisoner to go free. So he brings out a guy named Barabbas, and he's like, you know, I've got two prisoners here. One is Jesus and the other one is Barabbas. Which one of these should I let go? And the reality is, like, we're told enough about Barabbas to know that he's a bad dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's a murderer. He's an insurrectionist, which is what they love about him. And so he's like, which one of these two, expecting them to be like, well, you know, Jesus is a peaceful guy. He loves people. You know, he does good stuff. This guy over here is, he's a little crazy. And they all just start yelling, we want Barabbas, right? Which, you know, interestingly, in the way that the story is told, in Hebrew, Bar means son of, or son. Abba means father. So his name literally means son of the father.
And Jesus is that.
And Jesus is the son of the father, right? But in some of the early manuscripts of the gospel, they give him the name Jesus. So it's Jesus Barabbas, Jesus son of the father. Except this version of the one who is coming to bring independence to the Jews is coming with a military might, coming to free the people. I'm gonna deliver you from Rome. I'm killing Roman soldiers. That's why he's there in the first place. And over here is Jesus, the true son of the Father of heaven, who's coming and saying, my kingdom's not of this world, to love your enemies on the other side. And the people are given a choice, and they're like, we want the militant Messiah. We want our kingdom now. We want Rome overthrown. This guy over here infuriates us, so crucify him. And the more that Pilate presses in, the more that they're like, crucify him. He says, I can't find a fault in him, two more times. And then before the end of this whole process, he has him flogged. You know, it's like, maybe if I absolutely shred this guy, and I mean, and when they flogged you, maybe in a future episode we can get into that process, but there wasn't a part of your body that was spared.
Wow.
They did your front. They did your legs, your groin, your chest, your back, your buttocks, your legs, everything. I mean, and you would be shredded by these cat of nine tails that left you. The historians write about what these people look like would have been shocking. And so he has that done to him, thinking maybe this will appease the bloodthirst of the crowd. And so he comes back after Jesus has been mocked and the Roman soldiers are beating him and putting a purple robe on him and beating him with a staff and putting a crown of thorns on him. And he brings him back in front of the crowd and says, behold the man. Like, is this enough?
Yeah.
Essentially. And they all begin shouting, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. And Pilate is like, I there's no way out of this for me. And they start saying, you don't want Caesar to know that you're giving shelter to an insurrectionist, right? Like, you don't want us to talk to Caesar. And he's like, I'm going to wash my hands of this. Do with him what you want. And Jesus is taken away to be crucified. Now, if you get into the details of all of this, and that's kind of the purpose of this episode, I counted up 12 different ways that they violate their own law. And let's just go through them. Ready? Number one. It was illegal for the chief priest to bribe an accomplice in order to secure an arrest.
Oh, so Judas.
Judas.
Okay.
How much? 30 pieces of silver, right? And find us a time when we can get him. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is in the cover of darkness. It's all absolutely wrong, totally illegal. It was illegal for the Sanhedrin to convene after nightfall and before the morning sacrifice.
That's all they did.
This is like in darkness. And it's all before 9 a.m. is the morning sacrifice. Guess what time Jesus is hung on a cross? 9 a.m. So it's like before that takes place, he's already convicted. Totally illegal. Number three, it was illegal for the Sanhedrin to originate the charges against the accused. So the Sanhedrin member, like it would be like the jury being like, let's go find a criminal. You know, like, no, the charges have to originate from outside. It has to be somebody who brings a charge against you to the Sanhedrin or to the court. But here you have Annas who's like trying to find a charge, like, let me interrogate you. And then you have Caiaphas trying to bring all these false witnesses and everybody's claims are all over the place. But he's like, we're going to find something. I'm going to find something to convict you of. And that would have been illegal. Number four, Jewish law required that no judgments be issued on the eve of a Sabbath, nor on any festival. So you weren't allowed to hold a criminal court during the eve of a Sabbath, which is exactly what this is. The reason why Jesus has to be taken down from the cross, right? So quickly is why. Sabbath starts in the evening of the day that he's hung on the cross. So this is entirely illegal according to that law. And it, by the way, it's all during the festival of Passover. Number five, the Sanhedrin could not issue a death sentence on the same day as a guilty verdict. This is in their law. And they're just like, nope, we got to rush it. Crucify him. Crucify him. Number six, it was illegal to convict a man solely on the basis of his own comments. Which is where we get like Fifth Amendment. I plead the fifth. Like you're not required to incriminate yourself. You can't, even if I said I do this, they required validation from outside, right? So number seven, it was illegal for a man to be convicted without matching testimony from at least two witnesses. That's in the Bible. Nobody agrees. And by the way, here's something crazy. When he's in front of the Sanhedrin, what do they find him guilty of? He says, you will see me on the clouds of heaven. And they're like, this man has committed blasphemy. When they go before Pilate, do they say he's guilty of blasphemy? No, because Pilate won't crucify people for blasphemy. He doesn't care. The only reason they crucified people is if you stood up against what?
Rome.
And so they changed the charges between the trial of the Sanhedrin and when they appear before Pilate. It goes from he's guilty of blasphemy to something that's actually untrue, which is, this man is telling people not to pay taxes. No, he's not. In fact, he taught people, give to Caesar what is Caesar. So they change the charges. They lie about what they're convicting him of. They trump it up. And now they're presenting false evidence. All of this absolutely illegal. And they have no witnesses to verify this. Number eight, it was illegal to convict a man without first conducting a recorded and balloted vote of the elders. Nope, they're just shouting and it's bedlam, right? Number nine, it was illegal for the Sanhedrin to issue a guilty verdict outside of the temple complex. They can't go there. Why? Because the crowds would know something's up, right? Jerusalem is swollen with people. Number 10, it was illegal for enemies or adversaries of an accused person to sit in judgment of him. Like, these guys have been after him.
That's all it was.
Good night. Like, everywhere he goes, this is, in Matthew 23, it's like they're in essentially a shouting match with each other. They're clearly the adversaries, and they're the ones who sit in judgment of them. The Bible and Jewish law at the time required that if you were jaded, you had to recuse yourself. None of them do. Number 11, it was illegal for the high priest to interrogate a criminal suspect in private. Annas did that with nobody else to say, this is what he said, this is what Annas said. Like, so everything is conducted in private, in secret. And number 12, the judges of criminal proceedings were required to conduct a thorough investigation, that's Deuteronomy 13, 14, which requires you to have time for evidence to settle, time for people to gather their thoughts, time for you to collect witnesses, time for the accused to bring in defense witnesses, time for a case, a solid case to be done. And none of this was allowed. There was no thorough investigation. They were making it up as they went. They changed the charges. It was such a kangaroo court that this is one of the greatest mistrials in the history of humanity. And it was all put together so that they could have the appearance of righteousness. But they were just railroading him in every dishonest, unethical, possible way, all done in the cover of darkness.
And the crazy part about all of this, even the mistrial, is that Jesus went through it purposefully. that he allowed all of this to take place so that he could go to a cross so that we could be saved from our sins, that he did all of this. Mm-hmm. He sat through all of the floggings that night and eventually went to his death on a cross as the Son of God for us.
That's right. So Jesus is going to face the greatest injustice in history so that we could find mercy. Like, justice would have been, he's exalted and we go through what he went through.
Yeah.
Because we deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, we've stood against the king. We actually have committed insurrection against the king of heaven, right? Like, we are guilty of those things. And Jesus faces all the injustice so that he could provide us with abundance of mercy and grace, right? He is going to face the ridicule and torment and beating, not just of men, but from the foundations of the earth. He and the Father, out of love for us, have already consented with each other that he is going to lay down his life for us. And even there, in some sense, grace becomes an injustice, that the innocent one suffered so that the guilty can go free. And there's songs about this, but in a sense, we're all Barabbas.
Yeah.
We're all the wicked one. We're the ones that should be condemned, and we were allowed to go free. The innocent one was put on a cross. And all of this playing out just shows, like you said, he did it purposefully, and none of this was hoisted upon him. I mean, what does he say? You're not doing this to me. If I wanted to, I could call on legions of angels and they would free me. No man takes my life from me. I lay it down, he says. And that's how good our God is. He loves us that much that he would endure this level of wickedness from humanity so that we could be with him forever. Amen?
Amen.
All right. Well, we want to thank you so much for watching. Join us next time as we go under the hood of another story in the Bible.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'd love you checked out some other content we have. You can find that at sunlitstudios.com.